you may have seen, is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Actors, right? The road to fame and celebrity. All right, I get it. You've had an incredible life.
Aren't you sick of hearing about them?
Me too.
The only problem is, I'm one of them. Except I'm not famous. Oh, you've probably seen me. A bunch of times. I'm the guy with the information about the hero's dad. I'm the doctor that can't figure out what's wrong with one of the main characters. I'm the guy they just punched in the face during the interrogation. My name's Brian LaFontaine, and I'm a professional actor. Oh, and it's not just me. There's a ton of us.
We're the ones you don't hear about.
Yeah, we're the names that scroll by at lightning speed during the end credits. But there's way more of us than there are of them. We're important too, dammit. Because without us, they can't tell the rest of the story. So this is for all the movie and TV prostitutes, homeless people, drug dealers, cab drivers, cops numbers 2, 3, and sometimes 4, the pilots, the waitresses, and girl at party.
This is You May Have Seen.
Today I'm talking with Mark Fajardo. See, this is why I like doing this podcast. Because of guys like this. Mark Fajardo has appeared in over 50 movies and TV shows, and prior to our interview, I had no idea who the hell he was. Yeah, I'm sure he loves hearing that. But I want everyone to know who this guy is, because he's awesome. We talk about making movies with Helen Mirren, sage professional advice from Brian Doyle Murray, and Mark working with a huge snake. No, not that. Get your mind out of the gutter. Okay, here we go.
Big of a problem. And if it becomes a problem. Well, then just let me know. We'll pull your episode and, I'll find a way to ruin your life. That's all.
Yes!
That's
how I know that I make it.
That's right. Some nobody in Charlotte, North Carolina with a podcast with a very, limited listener base has ruined your career. How is that possible? Oh, man. So, Mark Fajardo, where may we have seen you?
You may have seen me on The Outsider, mm-hmm. episode 2, right after the titles.
Oh, sweet.
I was also... Yeah, I played a doctor. I played a young ER doctor named Myron Lazar.
Yes, cool. I've got that on here. Okay.
That also, I was the camera guy in The Hate U Give,
which you and I have in common.
Escaping a protest. Yeah, we have that in common.
We do.
Also, I was on an episode on SWAT. I was on the second episode, and I had a giant snake around me.
Yes.
A 55 pound snake named Steve. Fucking scary. It was the scariest shit. One of the scariest shit of my acting life. And I don't know. I was in a movie with Helen Mirren and Donald Sutherland. That was one of my highlights.
Yeah, called The Leisure Seeker.
The Leisure Seeker.
Yes.
Yeah. So grateful for that.
I mean, you've done quite a bit of stuff, and just to make it clear to everybody, you and I have never had the chance to meet before. We talked on the phone a little bit, but we have never met. We have no backstory. We've got no history.
This is our first date.
This is our first date. That's right. So we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants here. So for everybody listening, I am talking to Mark Fajardo. As you heard him mention, you may have seen him in The Outsider with Jason Bateman on HBO, the movie The Hate U Give, Unsolved, the murder of Tupac and Biggie as the front desk clerk here and now as key designer. Mm-hmm. You've got some great character names, which is fantastic for the show. Yes, you were on an episode of SWAT. You did the movie The Leisure Seeker with Donald Sutherland and Helen Mirren as Terry. General Hospital as camp counselor. Lady Dynamite as Raphael. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia as Stewart. Also seen on Desperate Housewives, Sleepy Hollow, Silicon Valley, Pretty Little Liars. Were you on Angie Tribeca as well?
I was.
Were you really? That was a fun show.
I forgot. Yeah, it was. It was really cool because I love Airplane, the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
That whole comedy style. So yep. I was really excited to be part of that world.
Yeah, no joke. And something called Quarter Lifers that you starred, wrote, and directed.
Yeah. So when I...
Look at you.
Okay, so when I came... I studied film. I studied film in UC Santa Cruz. And I studied film and community studies because I originally wanted to be a documentarian, a social documentarian.
Oh, wow.
And then Yeah, and then one of my professors said that, you know, doing a documentary is like throwing a suitcase full of money off a cliff. It's all about the cause. It's not about the capital. So
right,
I got really fucking discouraged about
sure.
that.
Right.
And then I started falling in love with the filmmaking. And then as soon as I came home to LA, where I was born and raised, I did a short film, a dramatic short film. I didn't see myself as an actor back then.
Okay.
I didn't get into acting until like later, until after I did that short film, basically. And then it was so like dramatic. It was like a 20-minute short film, and it was just super sad and dramatic. And right. I was like, fuck this. I need to do something like light and funny. And then that's when I did The Quarter Lifers. A friend of mine sent me an article that was about like the quarter life crisis. And after I read it, just I had the idea just sparked in my head, and I was like, oh shit, I got to do this. You know, 20 somethings get into their crisis of being in their quarter life and how their lives intersect and so on and so forth. So I did everything, and it was maddening and crazy because
yes.
coming from UC Santa Cruz, they yeah. don't teach you how to collaborate. They teach you how to be like a solo singular artist. And so that was, I was basically wearing multiple caps. I wrote some of it.
Yeah.
I collaborated with my buddies. I was editing it, shooting it, producing, co-producing it. So it was, it sucked the life out of me and the fun. And then
Just
started getting, directing is so much harder than acting. So I was like, fuck this, I'm just going to get into acting. Because it's like you live with a project for
sure.
years, you know, until like the final cut, even after the final cut.
Right. You live
know, like,
and die with it is what I hear.
Yeah.
And what was the time span on that from beginning to end? Like how big of a chunk of your life did that end up taking up?
I know we shot 2000. So maybe early of 2009 to early 2009,
mm-hmm.
we started writing it. And then we started shooting it end of 2009. And then I know how to edit very well. And I
right.
knew what I wanted. And I storyboarded everything. So I think I got Final Cut done into mid-2010. And then we had a screening after that.
Yeah.
And then I used copyrighted music because
okay.
I had, you know, my vision of what
sure.
I wanted the tone to be.
Mm-hmm.
But not until 2011, I booked a big commercial and I hired a music composer to
okay.
do the score. Possibly like at the end of 2011, everything was done. And I was just like, I was fucking done.
Damn, man. 2 years of
yeah.
your life devoted to one
yeah.
project. That's
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was doing like acting class and auditioning,
sure.
but you know,
right.
like sprinkles of it. So,
all right. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like you cover a broad spectrum of things and we're just like barely scratching the surface. I mean, you know, I'm sure you're aware. I was able to find some pretty interesting
yeah.
information about you.
On
the Google, on the interwebs. You're from LA, born and raised, right? And
yes.
You're working bicoastally now, right? You're hanging
yeah.
out. Did you say you're in Florida as well and kind of bouncing back and forth?
Yeah.
But yeah, you went
yep.
to Glendale
oh, yeah.
High School, UC Santa Cruz, and you didn't get into the acting stuff until later on. Like, how old were you when you finally started acting?
I was 25, 26. I was doing a long distance relationship and being half-assed like my first year.
Right.
And then after we broke up, I had to get my mind out of the breakup and I focused.
Yeah.
And I just started taking, I was starting to take like 3 different acting classes.
Right.
I just wanted to get good. So I was like, I think I was like 25, 26.
Yeah. So how did you,
yeah.
how the hell did you end up getting from the West Coast market into the Southeast market? How did that happen?
So after, I think 2012, 2013, I let go of my first manager. It wasn't a healthy relationship for me.
Right.
And concurrently, my first agent, she was such a great agent. Her life was changing. She
mm-hmm.
moved from LA to Austin, Texas.
Right.
And she said that she was going to close down her theatrical department, but still keep her commercial department. So I was somewhat in a panic attack. And I would just hear little murmurs here and there in the acting community with people saying, oh, yeah, I booked Walking Dead and...
Yeah.
And it's through like my Southeast rep. And then that planted a seed in my head. And then I just went online And I contacted a whole bunch of Atlanta agents, mm-hmm. And then I got my first one. And that's how my life started in 2013, yeah. being bi-coastal.
And did that change how your operation works? Like, you're getting auditions from the East Coast, or you need to, you know, you've been booked on something on the East Coast, and are you just like, okay, I'm up and I'm booking flights and making arrangements and all that stuff?
Yeah, yeah, it's exciting for me.
Yeah,
and because I've traveled all my life. I love traveling, and I was just looking forward to getting the fuck out of LA. Because you can only get so much out of
really?
This place.
Really? Because I've never heard anybody say anything like that before about LA. I mean, everyone loves being there 24/7. No one wants to leave.
I swear, every time I fly out for a booking or a callback, like right. my mind is like at peace in the Southeast. I'm like, and then I come back here.
Yeah.
And like on my first day driving around the streets, I get honked at in a fucking suburban area.
Yes.
Like, really, bro?
Yes.
You just fucked up my Zen mode, man.
Exactly. Right. That's why I ended up leaving New York. It was the same thing. You know, you get into those yeah. bigger markets, those bigger cities where there's just all this congestion and all this, I don't know, just hubbub for lack of a better term. And it can kill your spirit. I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's so much tension. It is so much fucking tension.
Yes.
So
one of the things that I...
Any excuse, yeah.
For sure. And one of the things that I found on you was that you choreographed a hip-hop dance team?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. So growing up, I
yes.
did... I grew up doing breakdancing. And then my junior year of high school,
mm-hmm.
I was part of the all male dance team.
Yes,
just for 1 year, and it was so crazy. It was a rigorous. We worked so hard for that it stressed me out. And then I took a break my senior year, and then going to UC Santa Cruz, I was part of the hip hop dance team, and I was there all my four and a half years, and we choreographed together. And I think it was my last year at Santa Cruz, I became one of the coordinators, and it was me along with two others. So
right.
I wasn't alone in
yeah.
taking on this leadership position, but it was one of the best times of my life, because it was the first time like I took on a leadership role, and it made me view my team as like a family. And I somewhat felt like a father to them, because
sure.
I have to make sure that, you know, it's like during midterms, like everyone's stressed out and there's personal issues going on in their lives.
Yep.
And I just wanted to be there for them, you know, in a psychological support and everything. And at the same time, stay focused in our goals and coming up with choreography for this like competition or this show
right.
Somewhere in the Bay. So it was such a great experience that we just cultivated this like family. It was like the most creative I've ever been, and so focused. It's just so cool to be in that flow. You
oh.
fall in love with your moments and your time and your energy, you
yep.
know, like it's, I think that's what I like to chase when I'm on the creative path
yep.
of things, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, cause I saw some of the stuff that you've got online, like some of the videos and the clips of you dancing and the, you know, the dance competitions or just performances that you did. And I
mm-hmm.
was like, holy shit.
Yeah,
this guy's got moves.
I wish I could still do that. I wish.
Oh,
I could
really?
No, I could still do it, but not to that extent, because I haven't been part of a team in a long time.
Yeah.
But every time I get a commercial audition, they ask me to do that. I would need like a good day or two to stretch
right.
and practice the moves.
I mean, it's very much in the vein of like these what step up type movies and things like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like these dance team competitions or performances, and it's really, really, it's like crazy impressive what I was watching, man. It was like, yeah.
I appreciate that, but quite honestly, I am not at that level. Like I remember my first couple of commercial auditions. I would
yeah.
audition against those guys from like America's Best Dance Crew
wow.
or like the Step Up, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just, I had super imposter syndrome, man. I'm
oh,
like,
yeah?
what the fuck am I doing here? These guys aren't like, I see them on,
wow, that's
on breakdancing documentaries.
Yeah.
Like they're just known in the dance community.
Sure.
I'm just here doing body rolls and waves and shit.
Still, that was pretty freaking remarkable. So dance is obviously a big part of your background. Because, I mean, you know, yeah. I know you said you started acting late, but you do have a performance background.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, like, I didn't know anything about acting. I thought, you know, I thought that bringing my experience as a dancer mm-hmm. to acting would translate, but it is just so different. It is so freaking different.
Right.
It's so, I didn't know what was going on in the inside, in my, the internal life that I needed to dive in. And that was definitely a journey for me. Because it's like being a dancer, it's, you're being an exhibitionist, you know? It's all about precision, for sure. Perfection, and hitting this and hitting that. So it was, it's just so different. And how did, so different.
And how did that start for you, though? Like, how did you get into dance to begin with?
Okay. I think it was because my sister was a big Janet Jackson fan.
Nice.
And we, I have a big family. And, okay. And we have a lot of cousins, so whom are in the Philippines right now. But when they were here in Los Angeles, we would hang out in my aunt's place and then play some Janet Jackson music. And then my sister would choreograph us and tell us to move our arms so then we could make some really cool, like, crazy arm design wave thing, you know? It was stupid, but, like, it was, like, the feeling of being part of something to make something cool.
Yeah.
Just using our bodies and stuff, you know? And then I got her friends, cause she's 7 years older than me.
Okay.
Her friends were like, a lot of them were like, I just remember seeing them break dancing. And then I asked one of them to teach me how to do this, like how to do the crab walk.
Okay.
You know?
Yes.
And so then it came easy for me and okay. I started doing it. And then, come like middle school, when I was in junior high school, I started seeing at our middle school dances, I started seeing guys that would just do really cool breakdancing moves. Mm-hmm. And then I got bit by that and I was just like, oh man, I got to do that, you know? And I just started watching MTV.
Yes.
Like 24/7 when MTV actually had music videos.
And right.
Tried to get some inspiration or learn some dance moves and, and just my friends and I, middle school, we would just have practice sessions and try to learn some combos and moves and stuff.
So I know you get a lot of questions about, you know, being Filipino and culture and you as an actor and that whole world. And certainly I'm going to ask you questions about that. But talk to me about your family and their take on you and what you're doing. Like, does it fall in line what their intentions were for you? Or are you like an alien to them? Or do they even give a shit about you to begin with?
Okay. So like growing up, like I have a big family. My, my mom has, she has, what was it? Like 10 siblings.
Wow.
I mean, but now that are here in Los Angeles, there are 1, 2, 3. I got three aunts. Wait, 1, 2, 3. Yeah. So she has 3 sisters and about 4 brothers or something. And just growing up, I had a huge family, and like in family parties, they would ask me and my cousin to perform for them. And I just got a high out of doing that. And I would like, I don't know, lip sync and, you know, and I just became the source of entertainment for them.
Sure.
And even like in high school, I was such an asshole. And just like in summer school, I just like, you know, I would just fuck around like in chemistry. Because chemistry class, I'm just, I wasn't listening. I straight up copied a lot of like the test, test answers from my high school friends, and I would just fuck around and just being a little dick. But I just wanted the attention. I just wanted to slice the tension in the air. You know what I mean?
Right.
So when I got into the creative field, like why I started studying film is because my friends at that time were very creative and I didn't know what I wanted to major in, mm-hmm. like my freshman year of college. I didn't know what I wanted to major in.
Right.
But my buddy was like a music head, you know, my other friend was also a music head and he was such a great writer. And so then I was like, fuck, how do I fit into this group, you know? Right. So it's kind of like out of insecurities. I was like, maybe I'll do film. I'll do film. I'll study film, you know? Sure. And so then as I studied, I started falling in love with it and I started becoming just literate in it.
Yeah.
To some extent. And then I started learning about the politics of representation of Asian Americans. And it was slowly growing into me that I was like being very, I was growing angry about these Asian stereotypes, Asian American stereotypes.
Sure.
And so then I wanted to create some sort of social change. And that's the whole reason why I wanted to become a social documentarian, is to make something powerful. Like Michael Moore was a big deal when he came out with his couple of first documentaries. And man, I want to do something like that, you know? Right. And so then Santa Cruz is very anti-Hollywood.
Okay.
It is very anti-Hollywood. Even on campus, a lot of the ideologies from the 60s and 70s is the oxygen in the air. It's still, it still permeates, you know? I wanted to be like anti-Hollywood, basically. And so then going back to my professor saying that doing a documentary is like throwing, you know, a suitcase full of money, it got to me. And I was like, shit, I got to be realistic. You know, if I want to make a living out of this, I got to do something realistic. Be an independent filmmaker.
Sure.
Be an independent filmmaker. So you'll make some money. You'll make some money. Not a lot, but some. So then, yeah, so then that was a transition. And then what is this called? When I returned back to L.A., a friend of mine, when I came back to LA, I was applying to a whole bunch of different post-production houses, production companies, whatever, putting my resume in, and I wasn't getting any bites. And my buddy, who was an aspiring actor, he was like, hey man, you should sign up for background casting so you could learn the terminologies of things, of, you know, becoming a director, how it's like on set. And so then that's what I did. We both registered at Central Casting. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but you have to like call their voice calling service.
Right, right.
And then if you fit the description, you call them, something like that. But I was very lucky because around February of 2007, I remember this day, somewhere around February 2007, I was reading, you know, Robert Rodriguez?
Yeah.
I was reading his book, what is called Rebel Without a Crew. And I was, you know, just getting educated in becoming a filmmaker. I get a call from Central Casting saying that, hey, you've been chosen by the director to be one of the multinational insurgents for the new Iron Man movie. Would you like to accept it or something? Yeah. And so then I felt like that was my Hollywood moment, man.
Boom. Yep.
I never got a call from any Hollywood person, you know, let alone a background casting agent. But I felt like $1 million.
Yeah.
And so I was elated, you know, I was so elated. So I did background for Iron Man.
Yeah.
The first Iron Man for like 3 weeks. And that got me to SAG.
Nice.
And that was, it was such a... an amazing experience. Such an amazing experience. This is my first time being on a set.
Holy crap. You know? Yeah. You don't get much higher. I don't know if you can get higher than that. That's like the highest.
Yeah.
As far as the size, the scope, the budget, the star power. Yeah. That's huge, man.
Exactly. Exactly. So it was the slow start of the acting bite.
Right.
Me being wanting to get into acting. And I just started getting curious and I was starting to ask a whole bunch of questions to one of the actors that played like the villain. And I didn't want to admit that I wanted to get into acting because I had a lot of insecurities. You know, I thought like being an actor, especially back then, you got to be tall, white, with a six pack, blue eyes.
Sure.
So on and so forth. You know, I don't see many of my type on the screen. Back then, I didn't see many of my type on the screen. So after that experience, I started taking acting class. Mm-hmm. And I would be in denial to myself that, like, you know, I want to be an actor. I even told my parents that I'm taking acting class to help me better become to be a better director. Right. That's what I told them, you know. I was maxing out their credit cards, dude. I was taking fucking improv, cold reading, scene study. Good Lord.
More with Mark in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are so many great podcasts on the network, and they're adding new ones all the time, showcasing great stories by great people and shining a spotlight on the Queen City. You can find them all at queencitypodcastnetwork.com. Shoutouts! You know, I'm not even sure who I want to shout out today. Let's see. Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. I know what I want to do. I want to shout out Alicia Fusting. She's a wonderful actress and supporter of the podcast, and she left a really sweet comment leading up to the release of this very episode. And she came and saw me and so many other You May Have Seen guests during our run of The Odd Couple and said so many nice things to me after the show I damn near passed out. Some people are just incredibly sweet and supportive of everything we do and go through, and Alicia is certainly one of them. So thank you, Alicia Fusting. You are incredible. All right, more with Mark Fajardo now.
Okay, so first of all, I got to think that doing 3 weeks of extra work on a movie like Iron Man right out of the gate would either kill you or make you want to pursue it further. Like, to me, that's like something that's either going to overwhelm somebody who's a first-timer and be like, holy crap, this is way too much for me to take in or handle, or it's going to do what it did to you, which is make you just fall in love with it and be like, oh, no, I got to have more of this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, on set, we were just in holding, sleeping because of food coma. Right. Most of the time, we were just fucking sleeping because of ate our asses off.
Yes,
you know, and just shooting the shit, and it was, I didn't know anything about acting. I was judging. I was such a dick. I was judging Robert Downey Jr. on his acting. Because I thought you were supposed to like project your voice, you know, and I was like in my head,
he's not even doing anything.
Yeah,
this guy's doing nothing.
Yeah, exactly. In my head, I was like, he's acting like himself.
You know? Ta-da. I know, right? And then I can totally relate with, I mean, understand what you're talking about, feeling like you weren't represented, but at the same time, it kind of connects me back to the podcast, which is, there's a perfect example for you at that time when you're still learning about the industry and the business, where so many of us, when we're watching, I feel, you know, movies and TV shows, it's hard to get past the main characters. And the whole point for me, for the podcast, is like, wait a second, what about all the rest of us that fill out the rest of the story?
Yeah.
You know, because while you may not have been represented as the lead character, there have been other actors like you from all walks of life and cultures and races forever and ever and ever. We've just never been the stars, you know? But I mean, do you see a shift now or more recently now that the industry seems to be realizing that there are other cultures and nationalities out there in leading roles?
Yeah, I am. I am starting to see a shift. It's weird for me because I feel like they're getting more of either the Asian, the British Asian, Australian Asian, or any Asian American that has a six pack. It's like a white version. An Asian version of a white person.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they gotta be fucking chiseled down to be a lead character. But I mean, that goes without saying. That is just my point of view. I'm pretty sure there's other Asian American actors that may or may not see it my way.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because I've even noticed it, because you worked on Silicon Valley. I just finished watching the rest of that series, and he's jacked now. he's totally like ripped. His arms are huge, and I'm like, okay, like, and he's gotten to that level of being basically an A-list celebrity.
Yeah,
but I could totally that made me think about that. I was like, I wonder if he feels like, okay, I finally got there. Now I've got to be able to represent. So let me get a trainer and let me get in incredible shape.
Well, is it because of his the new role in Marvel? Like, I forgot.
I don't know. Oh, maybe you might be right. Maybe that's
I think it's because of his new role in a new Marvel show that's going to come out. But
That's so funny that you noticed that.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, every Asian American knows what's up within the Asian American community, but I feel like that's the next graduation within the tier of in the ladder of success.
Yep.
Becoming an actor is like,
yes,
you land a role, you might start off as a quirky character, and then as you level up, you have to get buff for these roles.
Right.
Or you have to get super fat, and then you have to get buff again.
That's what I'm starting to feel like for me. It's like, hey, man, I think I can start to let myself go, you know. Gray hair, my window of being a Calvin Klein underwear model, I think those have passed, so let's load up on some pizza. We have someone in common. You're working with John Rosenfeld?
Oh, dude. Wait. Yep. Yes. I work with Brian. Brian Norris.
Okay, I don't know who he is. Is he work with John's studio?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, John and I were in an independent film together about 100 years ago. I had my one and only boy on-screen kiss with John Rosenfeld.
No way!
Yes!
No tongue, right? No tongue.
No. It was weird enough. It was weird enough as it was. Because it was like full on.
Crazy.
It was like this whole like shocking moment in the film where it's just, you know, these two, you know, you see these two guys hanging out the whole film as buddies, and then all of a sudden they turn and just plant a big fat kiss on each other, and it's that whole like, oh my God. So yeah, so John and I had to kind of have to gear up for that.
Did you guys talk about it before doing it?
Very, like,
did you guys...
very, very little, and it couldn't have been over fast enough. So talk to me about some of these friggin' shows, that some of these experiences that you've had. Like, we've already talked about it. SWAT, the episode of SWAT with the damn snake.
Okay.
I was like, what?
Yeah, man. Okay, so I got the audition the weekend before Comic-Con.
Okay.
And I was driving to Comic-Con with my buddy, and you know, I see the email that it's going to be on that Monday. I mean, first off, like, I was like, fuck, I got a fucking audition. I was being a little bitch and just like, complaining because I wanted to have fun.
Yeah. Comic-Con. It's okay. Hey, I totally get that.
And so you know, I read the scene, and it said that this character just escaped prison. He escaped jail, and they find him with a giant snake around his neck. And in my head, I'm like, okay, I guess they're gonna do VFX with that, you know? But so I, you know, I was setting the lines, and I would just go over it with my friends, and then come the day of the audition, the morning of the audition, I was just started to think about it. I was like, what if they have a real snake, you know? I wouldn't want that. I fear snakes. I don't know anything about snakes, so
that's a legitimate fear.
Yeah, and so then I was I didn't want to get the role. I did not want to book it because there would be a possibility, you know. I even told my housemate, like, I didn't work on it so hard as much as I would for any other audition. I was still kind of stuck on what I wanted to do. Because, okay, so there are these auditions. It might sound fucked up. There are these auditions where if you don't want it, you have to perform. I choose to. I would perform it in a way that is not like, what is this it's called?
A little self-sabotaging.
I would do the audition to the point where I don't suck, but I'm not in the pocket of the scene.
Right.
You know what I mean? So pathetic, bro.
But I'm laughing because that's the kiss of death. Like, I have had others like that too, where it's like, fuck it. Oh, fine. I'm just going to throw this out there. Ugh. I could give a shit about this. And then you book it and you're like,
yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. That fucking happened. It fucking happened.
I saw it coming. As soon as you're telling the story, I'm like, this is exactly why you booked it. It's exactly why you booked
it. It's why I fucking booked it. And so, so I don't know. Like, there's this thing that, like, I just want to be validated to the fact that I did a good job, you know?
Of course.
I didn't really want the role, but I wanted to do a damn good job so that the casting directors would remember me.
Of course.
And so I remember when I went to the audition, I knew slightly what I wanted to do, you know? But when I went to the audition, there was a guy that went before me, and the walls were so thin, so you could hear him. He kept on fucking up. He kept on fucking it up. He's like, oh, man, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't understand this thing. La, 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 la. I don't understand. And so I was like, dude, this guy is fucking... he is bearing himself down.
Sure.
And so then I was like, okay, you know what? I got this. I'm going to fucking take care of them. I will make these casting directors feel good about themselves. I did my thing, you know? I did my thing. And so I acted as if they were my babies. And as soon as I was... As soon as I realized that, I was thinking of Sophie's Choice. I was thinking of Meryl Streep.
God.
And I was like, fuck, these are my babies, you know?
Yep.
And because I teach kids, I care about the kids that I teach. Yep. So then I made that link and I made it personal for me, and sure. I raised the stakes for myself, and I personalized it in that sense. And so then I guess it popped. I guess it popped on screen, and I was very loose about it, because like, what if the chance I get a fucking snake over my neck, you know? And so then I booked it, and it was a fucking amazing experience. And once they booked it, I asked my manager at that time. I was like, hey, can you find out if they're gonna give me a real snake? And so my manager's like, oh no, they're probably gonna do VFX, because it didn't say so in the breakdowns when he submitted. You know, it didn't say must be comfortable,
right,
with a fucking 55-pound boa constrictor around your neck.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, so a couple days passed, and then I had a wardrobe fitting, and I think on the day of the wardrobe fitting, the AD called me and asked if I would be comfortable with a real snake around my neck. And I was like, not really, but you know, I could probably meet it. I could probably pet it before we roll on
action. Have a chat with it.
A chat with it.
Hey, you don't hurt me, I won't hurt you.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. Sure.
So I thought all snakes were poisonous. I didn't know anything about boa constrictors, you know. So I was like on YouTube. I was getting educated about snakes, so on and so forth. And I was like, even at night, I was trying to calm myself down, and I was like, let's just imagine a snake on my bed. Let's just imagine, you know, it'll be friendly. It'll be fine. So I did a lot of fucking mental preparation before that.
Yeah. I would imagine you would have to. Jesus.
Yeah.
So then you show up on set and they whip this thing out at you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But okay. So that guy, he's a story in itself. He owns like freaking 80 animals, not just snakes, but like, I don't know, fucking iguanas, insects, a fucking zebra and shit, like rhino. I don't know. But he makes a living doing this, you know? Mm-hmm. So he introduces me to Steve. Yellow boa constrictor, really sweet. He I think he was considered a baby, so he put it around my neck. You know, he was teaching me how to hold it, and he's like, you know, you got to pull it. You know, you got to hold your arm like a tree trunk for it to slide around, and so on and so forth. You know. So then when we started rolling, the first couple of takes, the snake Steve's head was sliding in between the cages of the set. And because their skin is like, what is this called? Like it has it's very scaly. So like if you pull it back, the scales like would fold out, you know? So it was getting really, really scary, you know? Cause we're in this small ass garage. The animal wrangler would come out and like pull this head out, like yanked it out. And I was like, oh shit, we're just getting it mad, you know? And like, I'm the one that's fucking carrying it. It's going to fucking swallow me whole. But so we ended up getting the take, you know, and like the director was super happy about it, and even like took photos of me with it and airdropped it to me, and like it was so rewarding. It was so rewarding to go through that.
That's amazing. That's really, really crazy.
Yeah.
And then you also, I saw you got the chance to work with Brian Doyle Murray and Danny DeVito
on
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah. I was so grateful for that.
Like two comedy legends.
Yeah, yeah. It was, they were really sweet. They were really, really sweet. And me and Brian were, there were many times where we were just like hanging out, waiting for the shot to be set up. He didn't talk that much. And I was still an eager, hungry actor. I was like, hey, Brian, so what advice do you have for for beginner actors or an actor like me? And then he goes, just keep your wallet with you. And I was like, okay. I was like, that's what he said. I was like, I didn't get it. I thought it was like a deep, profound thing to say. And I was like, well, why? And he was like, well, you can't trust these guys in the trailer, you know? You have no idea if they're going to step in your trailer. So that's, and then after that, there was like an awkward silence, and he's like, oh, I'm just going to get some coffee. He just walked away.
That's funny as hell. Now, I also read in another interview that you did, you know, they were asking you about auditions, and you said sometimes you get multiple coaching sessions done for like different coaches in preparation for an audition.
Yeah.
Is that for the same audition you will go to like
more
than one? Really?
I mean, that's what I did for the Leisure Seeker, because it was a big deal for me. I really wanted to nail it. I really wanted to feel good about myself and just to prepare, you know. So I got coaching from Brian, my teacher at John Roosevelt. I got coaching from my friend Camille Mana, and even after I booked it, because I just wanted to be sharp. I wanted to be loose, you know, and confident. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I was in the pocket.
Now, I also read, like, in dealing with frustration, I just want to know if it's still that way for you, if it's different for you now. And you said what's most frustrating is when you almost land the role, when you get to the final callback after having auditioned three times and it's between you and two other dudes who look like you, and then you find out you didn't get the role, and then it's like a gut punch, and that the whole process is an emotional roller coaster of excitement, hope, anxiety, and despair.
Yeah.
Which is like, wow, what a description, first of all. Is it still like that for you, or was this an earlier version of yourself that has evolved since then? And
I think it's not more so anymore. But then I haven't been getting a lot of auditions lately.
Okay.
And so I haven't really experienced something like that in a while. I think it just depends on what type of project and what type of role, if I really really want it, and if I know that I'm perfect for it. Yeah, it hasn't been like that lately. Now I just really want juicier roles, and now I'm starting to write for myself and for others as well. But now I feel like my priorities are shifting to help me grow and elevate.
What's it like dealing with, you know, the whole actor grind in Los Angeles?
For me, it's what's eating me up is jealousy. Jealousy and envy is what is eating me up. Like, I don't mind if I don't book it, you know, but if I feel that this one person that has not been in the game for that long, I don't know, for various reasons, like, I wasn't like this before, but I think there's something has changed in me where I know that I'm confident in my work. I know that I'm good. There are just things that I feel like I deserve, but it also goes to say that, like, I know it's part of my ego is getting at me. Like, I'm always trying to constantly put that shit in check, you know, and just to constantly remind myself that this is for a very long time, and that there's gonna be no rush in it. And even if I do get the role, who knows if it's gonna last, you know. That's the battle that I'm personally going through, is just dealing with jealousy and envy. And
it's a tough one. It's a tough one to friggin' deal with, because it's so easy to fall into those, I don't know, again, for lack of a better term, just bitter mindsets that really, that you know as well as I do in talking about it, that it doesn't serve you well when you end up in those places. But it's very easy to get there. It makes total sense how, you know, we as actors can end up there. We love what we do. We're so passionate about it. We work so hard at it. And when you don't get the results in the way that, you know, that we've carved out in our own brain, that it can be real. And again, you tell me, as I spend a lot of time by myself.
As an
actor, I get to spend a lot of time by myself, and that's not always the healthiest thing.
No, it's not.
All you have is what's up here, man.
Yeah.
And that can go spiral out of control in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So I certainly understand the frustrations and the challenges, you know, mentally, emotionally.
Yeah,
we deal with and struggle with, for sure.
Yeah, my acting class, whom I love at Brian Norris's group, we're very open about our personal stuff, you know, about our doubts and fears and our vulnerabilities, and I'm very open to them about like how I've been feeling lately, you know, and like I'm so grateful for them, because they put me in check, or not put me in check, but they put me into a level of healthy perspectives, you know, and like that's the healthy conversation that I need, is to bring me back down to earth and tell me that it'll be cool, it's fine, you know.
Yeah,
it'll be all right.
there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, whatever that means, I think that there's always a way out of the darkness again. Yeah. And you know, and I know that it's always difficult for us because we're going like, okay, well, what's it going to take for me to get there? But somehow we do always end up out of it. Mm-hmm. We fall back into it, but yeah, we always find a way out at some point. Okay. I'm going to ask you this, and just because you asked Brian Doyle Murray this, and you've been doing this for a while, what would you say to an aspiring young actor?
I was very
prepared. Watch your wallet.
I was very prepared to answer this.
Okay. Like, I don't usually ask this, but since you brought it up.
I have a lot of answers, basically. So wherever you are, I think you have to find a healthy rhythm that you would do for a week. Mm-hmm. That you know that cultivates your soul. For me, in the beginning, it was like gymnastics class or dance class, then acting class, improv class, whatever. Whatever that would help you in your skill set and your artistic that would feed your artistic hunger, and that would just help you grow as an artist. And then from then on, that would be your foundation, because the business is just so damn fleeting and flaky that yes. If it doesn't come to you, then you can always fall back on your foundation of creativity. And of course, find a flexible job if you can, and try to find your tribe of trustworthy artists that would listen to you unconditionally, that would give you healthy advice about the business, about personal stuff. And then from there, make sure to flap your wings and fly, you know? Flap your wings and fly and just go with the business. Don't take anything personal. And always keep track of your expenses.
Hold on to your wallet.
Hold on to your wallet, dude.
Flap your wings and fly, man. I love that. Well, I hope that that continues to happen for you, man.
Brian. What you're doing is freaking dope. Seriously. Everyone Thanks, needs Mark. This type of nourishment, you know? Of hope.
I appreciate that. And I certainly appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me, man. This has been so, so, so great. And I look forward to keeping tabs on what's coming up for you.
Yes, you too, please. So, keep me posted, man. Thank you.
You got it, man. I'll do it. This has been You May Have Seen with Mark Fajardo. Thank you so much for listening.
Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.